Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Monday, June 15th. I'm Taylor Heckert. Petersburg's debate over communications towers took a twist earlier this month when the Petersburg Borough Assembly rejected both a controversial land sale to a regional tribal broadband company and a new zoning ordinance for wireless communications facilities. But as KFSK's Olivia Rose reports, both issues are returning for assembly members to consider tonight.
Both proposals were several months in the making. The 17-page zoning ordinance was developed in response to public concern and opposition over new communications towers planned to go up around town. Its stated purpose is to protect public welfare, borough authority, and the aesthetic character of Petersburg. Here's what Assemblymember Scott Newman had to say at the June 1st meeting.
I feel like this work is the absolute best document that we can come up with that would give us the ability to navigate this issue. So it's very surprising to me that there were people on the assembly that would not support this.
Petersburg's current zoning code was adopted in 1985 before cell phones and broadband existed. The proposed zoning update would have established a range of requirements for facilities like towers, from setback distances to development standards and getting conditional use permits from the local planning commission. But some assembly members took issue with certain language included in the proposed code, like references to federal law. Here's Assemblymember Rob Schwartz.
Part I'm having trouble is, while remaining consistent with the Federal Communications Act of 1996 and related regulations, that is the hang-up for me.
Schwartz said that law also needs to be updated, which he called triggering. Vice Mayor Jay Stanton Greger said he thought some aspects, like the setbacks, were overly restrictive.
It more or less removes the ability to put a cellular tower in the greater downtown or in surrounding areas of Petersburg without a conditional use permit, and that strikes me as too restrictive.
Assemblymember Jeff Mucci called the proposed new zoning a blueprint to work off of.
It might not be exactly perfect, but it'll get us in the door of setting parameters for a community-wide concern that people have spent hours talking to most of us about.
Some assembly members said they should try making changes to the ordinance instead of just rejecting it. Others argued it required too many revisions. The assembly's vote deadlocked 3-3, preventing the measure from advancing. In other words, the zoning ordinance was dead. Just minutes later, the assembly took up a separate but related issue, whether to sell borough-owned land near the town's fire hall to Tidal Network, the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska's broadband company. Tidal Network wants to buy the property to house one of its communications towers. The borough and Tidal Network have been negotiating the sale contract terms since the assembly approved the application last September, directing the matter to borough manager Steve Giesbrecht.
We negotiated with Tidal, and it's the one thing that took so long, was because this is not something that Tlingit and Haida Central Council does very often. In fact, the statement was this is the most they've ever given on this issue. So we think we've got a strong contract that in the event there's any kind of an issue, the borough can take action. They will not be protected by sovereign immunity on anything related to this tower business.
Vice Mayor Stanton Greger said he supports the sale because the company followed the local procedure for it.
I don't think the borough should be in the position of denying private business when they're doing everything right.
But Assemblymember Mucci says he doesn't see Tidal Network as a private business.
I don't view it that way. I am concerned that if we don't vote to move forward with this sale, that it's going to go in somebody's yard here in town that is going to be a little bit more upset of where this piece is up by the fire hall.
He called it a conundrum. The tower issue gained traction among community members over the past several months, adding up to hours of public testimony, work sessions about towers, and researching alternative sites for the company's project.
There is no good place to put it, but this is like the least bad place to put it.
That's Assemblymember Newman again.
I don't want this. I don't want it there. I don't want to fly by it. I don't want to look at it. I don't want to drive by it. I think, you know, this could have been handled differently. But at the same time, it's the least of all the evils.
The roughly 10,000 square foot parcel would have been sold to Tidal Network for $45,000 its assessed value. But the Assembly ultimately rejected the sale in a surprise vote by a 4-2 margin. Assemblymember Mucci told KFSK he got nervous when the zoning ordinance, which he supported, failed, which led him to vote down the land sale issue.
As, you know, originally it looked like it was going to be an easy thing moving it forward, but there's all kinds of little nuances to this thing. And I want to make sure that we're doing, me personally, I want, as an assembly member, I want to make sure that we're doing things to protect the community.
He says he wants to make sure that new zoning for the communications facilities is also in progress when considering the potential sale. So, although both the zoning ordinance and the land sale failed at the June 1st assembly meeting, it wasn't the end for either measure. At Mucci's request, both items are being brought back for reconsideration at the next assembly meeting on June 15th. The sale contract remains exactly the same, but the zoning ordinance has been slightly revised by borough officials involved in its creation, mainly pertaining to the setbacks. The new version is considered a different ordinance.
I'm hoping we move forward on Monday, but you know, that's up to the assembly to decide what they want to do.
Reporting in Petersburg, I'm Olivia Rose.
There are several other issues going before Petersburg's Borough Assembly tonight, including a proposed increase to sewer rates to account for various operational and infrastructure expenses, and whether to raise Petersburg's sales tax cap with voter approval this fall. You can find the agenda for the meeting on our website, kfsk.org. The Petersburg Borough Assembly meets tonight at 6 o'clock in the Assembly Chambers. KFSK will broadcast that meeting live. Two new Coast Guard icebreakers will be homeported in Kodiak. That's according to a press release posted by the U.S. Coast Guard last week. A third icebreaker will be homeported in Seward when construction of supporting infrastructure in the town is completed. Senator Lisa Murkowski spoke about the announcement alongside Senator Dan Sullivan on a press call on Thursday.
This announcement today from the Coast Guard is not just cause for celebration for Kodiak and Seward. This is cause for celebration for the entire state of Alaska.
According to the release, the first of the icebreakers will arrive in Kodiak by the end of 2028. They are the second, third, and fourth icebreakers to be announced as homeported in Alaska. A previously announced icebreaker, built from a converted oil ship called the Storis, will arrive in Juneau in 2029. Arctic Security Cutters are a new class of medium-sized icebreakers. The vessels are the first of their kind in the United States, according to the press release, with a heavier focus on security than the Coast Guard's existing three icebreakers. Murkowski said during the press call that the introduction of the vessels is part of a greater push to expand the Coast Guard's presence in the Arctic. Particularly as the climate warms and Arctic ice melts, countries around the world are expanding their icebreaker fleets.
The United States was lagging woefully behind Russia, even behind China, countries that don't even come close to the Arctic ahead of us in the icebreaker game.
Last year, President Trump approved the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which allocated $25 billion to the Coast Guard, including nearly $9 billion specifically for the construction of new icebreakers. And according to a February press release, the Coast Guard has awarded contracts for 11 total Arctic Security Cutters. During Thursday's press call, Sullivan said that all 11 are slated for completion by 2035. Kodiak is the largest Coast Guard base in the United States. The island homeports half of the state's six cutters, and Base Kodiak is set to receive two more offshore patrol cutters in the coming years. The base is also expanding its housing capacity in preparation for additional personnel. Sullivan said that Kodiak's housing was a key part of the decision-making process.
It's actually just beautiful housing. It's state-of-the-art for the Coast Guard. I think it's state-of-the-art for the entire, all the military services, which is why they went with two.
Seward is also in the process of building capacity for more Coast Guard activities. One of Kodiak's offshore patrol cutters will also be going to Seward when additional housing units are finished with construction in 2029. Gray whales have been dying off the coast of Washington state at alarmingly high rates this year, and the summer migration season isn't over yet. Scientists are racing to understand what's causing the die-offs, but they think it might be related to climate change. And as KMXT's Catherine Irving reports, the waters in the Gulf of Alaska might be offering the population a lifeline.
Matt Van Diel remembers the moment he first noticed something was different about the gray whales near Kodiak. Van Dale is the natural resources director at the Shunack tribe. It was the middle of last summer, and he thought he'd drive a few minutes to check how many gray whales had arrived in their feeding grounds off of Passagshack Bay, which is at the south end of the island's road system. He was expecting to see a handful at most. Instead,
we're, you know, scanning the horizon, and it looked like smokestacks from all the whales breathing.
Soon after, Van Dale arranged to go out with a Coast Guard plane to survey the whales from above.
And that's when it really, getting up in the air and being able to see, you know, 100 to 150 whales right there.
In the following months, the number of whales near Passagshack Bay grew to nearly 300. Before last year, the average number of whales in the area was between just 25 and 30. Van Dale says so far, it's looking like they'll see high numbers again this year. And he's not the only one who's noticed more gray whales than normal. Lauren Wild is a research biologist and assistant professor of applied fisheries with the University of Alaska Southeast, Sitka campus. She grew up in Sitka, and back when she was a kid, she says there were maybe 10 or 15 whales coming through the sound every year to feed. But in 2020, that changed.
When I was out collecting herring eggs, I counted just sort of skiffing around with a friend, so not an official number, but I counted close to 200 individuals.
She says those high numbers have remained the norm in Sitka since then. These shifts in places like Kodiak and Sitka are happening as the gray whale population at large is tanking. Gray whales were hunted almost to extinction in the early 1900s. Hunting bans helped the population recover until around 2019. That's when scientists started seeing more dead gray whales than normal and fewer calves being born. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration designated it as an unusual mortality event. NOAA announced the die-off was over in 2023, when the population looked like it was recovering. But with the amount of whales that have been dying off the coast of Washington State this year, scientists think they may have celebrated too soon. Carly Lowe is a marine mammal specialist with NOAA's Protected Resources Division.
In 2024, there were a total of 61 gray whales stranded along the West Coast. Last year, there were 179, so almost three times as many. And this year so far, we're at 127. And we're not done with the season. They are still stranding in Alaska, so we expect that number to go up.
Scientists from Baja, Mexico, all the way to Alaska, gathered on a video call last month to share what they've been learning about gray whales and what could be causing them to die. John Kalambokides is a co-founder and research biologist at the Cascadia Research Collective, a Washington nonprofit that studies marine mammals.
The Arctic is an area that has seen, you know, over multiple decades, you know, pretty dramatic ecosystem changes. And where some of the areas gray whales feed that are monitored, there's been dramatic declines in the prey abundance.
He says the leading theory is that warming water in the Arctic, caused by climate change, has led to a massive drop in the available food out in the Bering and Chukchi Seas, where gray whales typically bulk up in the summer. Van Dale, from Kodiak, was on the call last month too. He says, comparing notes, one thing was clear. Gray whales are showing up in places they don't usually go. The waters off San Francisco and Vancouver, British Columbia, for instance, have seen way more gray whales than previous years, just like Kodiak. He says this is probably because of the conditions in the Arctic. With nothing to eat at their normal buffet, the whales are looking for new grub.
They're very intelligent creatures. They're individuals, and so they're going to go where the feed is.
But not everywhere has the same type of food source. In San Francisco Bay, scientists estimate that at least 1 in 5 gray whales are dying there from starvation or boat strikes. But in parts of Alaska, grays are leaving with their bellies full. Wild and Van Dale both say they've seen many whales in noticeably better body condition at the end of their stays than at the beginning. Scientists still aren't sure what other impacts this shift will have. In some places, like Sitka and Puget Sound, Kalambokides says they could see more conflicts between whales and fishermen. In Kodiak, Van Dale says their impact could be more positive.
We'll probably see a rebound and a bloom of species richness out there because of the gray whale's presence.
He says that in a season of abysmal news for grays, places like Kodiak offer a rare bright spot. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Catherine Irving.
For KFSK, I'm Taylor Heckert.